lit open and a rack of gremlin drones folded out of the recess. One by one, he tossed three of the saucer-sized drones, quad rotors popping out of each as they disappeared into the downpour. Three image panels appeared on Carson's HUD a few seconds later, live feeds from the gremlin sensors. She watched as they zipped down into the city, heading out in different directions, automatically mapping and cataloging everything in their path. There was no motion at all, no sign of life. As the spaceport's runway appeared, Carson switched off her gremlin feed, not wanting to be distracted by the footage. Looking over her shoulder, she found her team standing behind her, waiting. Carson keyed her IR link to Greer.
Once we're cleared, drop back into a holding pattern and stand by for further instructions.
The mule slowed as it swooped toward a rain-swept landing pad. Puddles rippled as the shuttle stopped in a hover. Without another word, Catherine Carson took a step and jumped from the mule. She landed hard, water splashing around her from cracks in the tarmac. She rolled forward, coming up on her knee. The suit's reactive system reduced the impact to little more than a jolt, as if she'd only fallen a few feet. She pushed herself to her feet, bringing her carbine up and sweeping for threats as the thuds from her team landing sounded behind her. The status alert she'd expected to appear on her HUD were notably silent.
Too quiet,
Carson thought. The control tower stood at the edge of the tarmac 50 meters away. The large prefabricated building was an older design, out of date by almost 10 years. Lightning flashed above, illuminating the structure, revealing signs of wear and tear from years of exposure. The carcass of what looked like an old TA-67 transport sat to one side of the tower, its metal skeleton illuminated by flashes of lightning.
Birch? Anything?
Rain's cutting down on the IR range. I could switch the frequencies, but it'll spotlight us if anyone's monitoring.
Carson considered that for a moment.
Now, hold off. If we're having IR issues in this weather, chances are if anyone else is out there, they're having similar problems. No need to give our position away just yet. Let's see if the tower's got enough juice to patch a link to Spirit.
Sculpt's dead, Popoff said. No activity on any channel.
Carson's leg ached as the team jogged across the tarmac. She allowed herself a grimace behind her helmet, but fought unsuccessfully to hide her limp. As they reached the control tower's entry hatch, she let out a pained breath. Popoff and Nunez took up positions on either side of the door. West slapped Popoff on the shoulder.
Go ahead and knock.
Roger that.
Popoff pulled her knife from its scabbard on her thigh, then used the hilt to knock off the dataport's faceplate next to the door. She took a moment to inspect the components, then said,
Internal batteries are dead.
Nunez took a step toward the door.
I can kick it.
That door is solid steel, West said. You looking to break your foot?
Popoff pulled a small block from a pouch on her chest and began connecting leads to the panel circuitry.
Explosives?
Nunez said, looking back at the master sergeant.
I've got just the right?
No.
Carson looked up at the roof, partially silhouetted by the intermittent flashing in the storm clouds above.
How long would it take those cells to lose their charge?
They shouldn't have, Popoff said without looking up. They're self-sustaining, so long as the panels get enough sunlight. Someone must have disabled them.
Why would they disable the power?
Carson asked. A red light came to life on the panel.
There we go, Popoff said, tapping commands into her small terminal.
Huh. The security cipher's probably 10 years out of date.
The panel's red light flashed green, and the door opened with an audible click. Nunez pushed the door open with a foot, sweeping his carbine's barrel light through the darkness inside.
Stack up,
Carson said, moving behind Nunez. Popoff closed her terminal as Moretti and West stepped into formation behind Carson, with Birch and Popoff bringing up the back. From the very first week of training, every Pathfinder had basic tactical entry ingrained in them. Residential tenements, starships, space stations. The PF teams approached them all the same way. Unlike their brother and sister combat units, PFs approached every situation with a slow, methodical tact. Armor used sheer brawn. Marines overwhelmed with shock and awe. Pathfinders outsmarted.
Rear guard up,
Birch said. Moretti slapped Carson on the shoulder, who then slapped Nunez.
Go.
Without hesitation, Nunez led their line into the dark interior of the building. As soon as Nunez broke the threshold, he turned left. Carson turned right, bringing her carbine up, its light cutting a wide beam through the darkness. Shadows danced around the room as the rest of the team filed in behind her. Several rows of cubicles filled the space, stretching back almost 30 feet to the rear wall. Carson moved to the right wall, then turned and started making her way down the row, clearing each cubicle as she went.
"Does it look like someone forgot to pay the janitor bill, or is it just me?"
Nunez said, moving down the far left row. Carson stepped over a chair lying on its side in the middle of the walkway.
"Looks like someone had a pretty good fight in here."
A few of the cubicle walls were bent, some completely out of their steel brackets. Several chairs lay overturned, and some looked as if they'd been thrown across the room. Carson panned her light across a widescreen terminal. Something had smashed into the display on one side, sending a spider web of cracks across the screen.
"Hey, Birch, look at this," Nunez called. "Does this look like an energy burn to you?"
Carson slowed, mind racing with all the potential possibilities. There had definitely been some kind of a battle here. The question was, who had been fighting and why? She looked over the middle cubicles to where Nunez stood, pointing at a place on the far wall. Stepping past Nunez, West bent over to examine the spot and then straightened.
"Definitely an energy blast. No way of telling what made it, though."
"Oh, God,"
Popoff said, stepping back down the row, her light fixed on something on the floor.
"Chief, what do you got?"
Carson said, cutting down one of the side aisles. She turned into Popoff's row and stopped short when she saw what Popoff's light was illuminating. A human skeleton, dressed in dark blue pants and shirt, lay on the floor. As she stepped closer, Carson saw that the skull had been crushed, bone fragments scattered around the shoulders. Bony fingers still gripped a metal pipe, bent slightly near the end. Popoff put a hand to her stomach and used the other to brace herself against the nearest cubicle. Moretti stepped up beside her and pressed the release for her helmet just as she doubled over. Her face mask flipped up just as she vomited onto the floor. Nunez and Birch appeared in the adjacent aisle as West stepped up to help Moretti steady Popoff.
"You okay?"
West asked.
"I'm okay,"
Popoff said, shaking them off. She pulled off one of her armored gauntlets and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand.
"What the hell happened here?"
Nunez asked.
"Someone really did a number on this guy,"
Moretti said, kneeling down beside the corpse.
"If it was a guy, severe blunt force trauma, probably died instantly."
"What, like someone hit him with a hammer or something?"
Popoff asked. The medic shrugged.
"Could have been anything. Power armor can manage that much strength."
"Yeah, but the first colonists didn't come over ready for a fight, did they?"
Nunez said.
"And besides, why would they be fighting each other?"
"Sometimes colonists turn on each other,"
West said.
"Sometimes the isolation gets to people. I've seen it before on some of the outer colonies."
Nunez pointed at the corpse with his carbine.
"That's awfully harsh. Besides, if they were fighting each other, where are the other bodies? And what could they possibly be fighting about here?"
"It doesn't matter,"
Carson said. Her team turned to her, expectant.
"Our job is to figure out why the colony's out of contact. Let's finish securing the tower and see if we can get power back up. If there truly was a civil war here, we can figure that out later, once the director and the rest of the command crew is down here. Birch, let's get some more gremlins up. I want our perimeter locked down tight. Nunez, Moretti, secure this level. West, Popoff, with me. We need to find the main control room."
Carson took point, leading them through a door at the back of the room and into a dark hallway. They passed by two sets of elevator doors, one stuck partially open. Another hall branched off to their left, leading to more offices, and past that a pair of bathroom doors. Energy blasts scarred the walls in several places, but thankfully there weren't any more bodies.
"Main control should be in the tower,"
Carson said, stopping at a door at the end of the hallway marked stair access, restricted. The door hung open a few inches. When Carson nudged it with her boot, it swung back without resistance.
"I'll take point. West, you secure the stairwell."
The master sergeant nodded, and Carson started up. At the top of the stairwell, they reached a locked door marked Level 4 Flight Ops.
"Popoff, work your magic,"
Carson said, stepping out of the way. A second later, the door clicked open, and Carson pushed through, sweeping left as Popoff moved right. West followed on their heels, holding the center of the room. Rain pounded against large bay windows at the far end of the room, some 50 feet away. Two rows of terminals formed identical horseshoes facing the windows, where the air traffic controllers would track incoming aircraft visually and on their computers. Occasional flashes of lightning outside lit the room.
"Still no bodies,"
West said. Carson moved across the room to look down over the airfield. The dark shadows of buildings loomed in the distance. Whatever had happened here, she was sure it hadn't been good.
"I think I might be able to shunt some auxiliary power from my suit into one of these terminals,"
Popov said, setting her carbine down next to one of the computers.
Might be able to troubleshoot the system's power outage that way?
Popov popped the panel off the underside of the terminal and fished around for the correct cable. She found it a second later, then spliced in a temporary bus connection and tapped a few commands into her forearm screen. Carson had a basic knowledge of computer systems, but didn't claim to be an expert. Popov might have shown some weakness at the sight of the mangled skeleton, but she was definitely comfortable with electrical systems, and that kind of technical knowledge was often more valuable than any level of combat prowess. A few lights came on inside the access panel, and the display came to life, glowing a dull gray.
Huh. That's weird, Popov said. Power's connected, but the system doesn't seem to want to initiate. Hold on.
Carson and West exchanged looks as Popov bent underneath the terminal. She grunted, reaching into the computer's innards. A second later, she rose up on her knees, holding a flat metal box. One corner looked melted, and a sticker on the top of the box looked like it had burned away.
The core's been melted, Popov said. Let me guess, Carson said. That wouldn't just happen?
Popov shook her head.
Not like this, it wouldn't. This kind of damage had to have been intentional. See the burn marks, here and here? Like someone disabled the breakers and fried the system.
Why fry their computer core?
Carson wondered aloud.
I mean, even if there was some kind of civil war between factions, you'd think they'd want an operational spaceport. Why go to all that trouble?
Popov moved to the next terminal.
This one's the same.
As Popov continued down the line of computers, Birch's icon flashed on Carson's HUD.
Chief, I've got movement about 200 meters northeast of our position.
Carson felt her pulse quicken as she accepted the gremlin's feed. The bird's eye view showed a human-looking figure moving through an alley, though she couldn't make out any features through the rain.
Can you give me a better angle? Carson asked.
Working on it,
Birch said.
Mingle!
Popov said, the upper half of her body stuffed inside a terminal.
They have a backup data shunt in here. Pretty standard, just a bitch to get to. It's a fairly impressive T9 line, top of the line 15 years ago, but still pretty good.
In English, please,
Carson said, moving to the window. Popov's voice echoed inside the terminal.
Most systems have auxiliary backups. A lot of our military corps have 3 or 4 even. They're remote storage locations that mirror the central hub. To prevent total data loss in the event of a critical failure, if I can just reach the coupling...
Chief, I've got several more contacts. 300 meters in closing. I'm redirecting... What the hell? I just lost connection to Gremlin 3.
Carson strained to see through the rain, but saw nothing but dark shapes of buildings through the storm. She caught a glimpse of one of the gremlins as it zipped across the tarmac, heading off to her left.
Birch, what's your status?
Stand by, I'm redirecting 2 to check it out.
Carson accessed the feed from the drone just as it passed over one of the colony's large warehouses. A red box appeared in the drone's window, tracking something on the next roof. The image zoomed in, and Birch cursed as the drone automatically adjusted focus, revealing the broken chassis of a gremlin drone, smashed on the ground. A second later, the image vanished, followed by another string of curses. Carson's chest tightened.
Birch!
Gremlin 2's offline.
Nunez, Moretti, status!
Nunez answered.
We're secure, Chief.
She turned to Popov.
Popov, can you connect to the secondary core or not?
Popov grunted.
No, but if I can get this shunt free, you may be able to tell me where the core is.
You've got 1 minute. Carson turned to West. Signal the mule. Relay to Spirit that we've made contact. Undetermined if hostile or not.
West nodded.
Roger.
Gremlin 3's down,
Birch said.
Shit,
Carson said, moving away from the window.
I'm coming to you, she said to Birch. Then, Popov, move. The less time we're here, the better.
West fell in behind Carson as she headed for the stairs.
You want the mule inbound? I want it here 5 minutes ago.
A minute later, Carson reached ground level, breathing hard and fighting the growing pain in her leg. She and West made their way through the hall and the main office space, where the rest of her team had already set up an improvised fighting position. Nunez and Moretti were kneeling behind 2 desks they'd pushed together just inside the exit. Birch sat by himself, dabbing at the air to holo controls only he could see. The exit door stood open, rain spilling in from outside. Thunder cracked through the air as Carson and her team sergeant both took a knee beside Nunez and Moretti.
What do you got?
Carson asked.
Moretti shook his head.
Nothing.
She turned to Birch. Any luck with the gremlins?
Negative. All three drones are offline. I have two in reserve. I can...
Now hold off until... Look! Nunez said, pointing into the storm. It took a minute for Carson to see it. A tall figure, standing at the edge of the tarmac, just barely visible in the rain.
What's he doing?
Nunez asked.
Why's he just standing in the rain like that?
Warning bells screamed in the back of Carson's mind, where memories from the Belisarius were flashing. Something was very wrong here. They waited in silence for several minutes, all eyes fixed on the lone figure standing stock still in the rain. Blood pounded in Carson's ears, and she had to force herself to fight off the rising panic, twisting her stomach. They couldn't just sit here waiting. She had to do something. Finally, Nunez looked over his shoulder at her and said,
Maybe he doesn't know we're in here. Should we make the first move?
The first move, Carson repeated in her head. The thought shook her to the core. The last time she'd made a command decision in the field, it had gone wrong. Terribly wrong.
Chief,
West's voice pulled her back. Carson took a deep breath and stood.
Watch my back.
She walked to the door, hesitated, then stepped outside. Rain pounded against her suit, streaking off her visor. She swallowed the lump in her throat, raised a hand, and activated her suit speakers.
I'm Warrant Officer Catherine Carson, Pathfinder Corps. I'm part of a second expedition to the planet. Can you hear me? Where are the colonists?
The figure's head tilted slightly, but it remained still. For a second, Carson wondered if he'd heard her. Then another figure appeared through the rain, and another. They all seemed to be roughly the same size, all broad-shouldered and at least a foot taller than the average man. As the new arrivals came up behind the first, they all started moving forward toward the tower.
Halt!
Carson hefted her carbine.
Do not come any closer until you...
A flash of lightning illuminated the figures, and Carson finally got a good look at their features. Their faces were thin, almost skeletal. Small beady eyes glowed from dark sockets above a flattened indentation where a human nose would have been. Two rows of pointed teeth met in a thin line below the nose. Wide pauldrons were mounted on their shoulders, and thick arms with pale white skin nearly broke through the stretched fabric of their simple overalls. They bent forward and broke into a jog.
Permission to fire!
Nunez shouted. Carson brought her carbine up.
Halt! Stop where you are!
They kept coming.
Holy shit, what are they?
Nunez said.
Should we fire a warning shot?
Moretti asked. Carson hesitated. Whatever they weren't human. First contact protocols were designed to keep a chance meeting with intelligent species from degrading into hostilities that neither side wanted. Shooting an alien because it made you nervous was not part of the plan. But she still had a duty to protect her team, and it didn't take much deduction to connect the bestial aliens closing on her to the absent colonists. Carson shook her head.
Stop where you are, or we will shoot!
Shannon.
The name came from the lead creature and was echoed by the other two, their voices low and foreboding.
They ain't stopping,
Nunez said.
We are part of the human expedit-
The lead figure lunged forward, charging at Carson without warning. Lightning flashed again, revealing a lifeless face resembling a stretched-out human skull, teeth clenched together. It launched itself into the air, long, claw-like fingers spread. Carson cried out and jumped to one side. Dropping to a knee, she fired as the monster sailed over just out of reach. A burst of Gauss rounds snapped from her carbine, and a high-pitched scream tore through the rain as her rounds hit home, slamming into the attacker, spinning it in midair. It bounced off the soft, rain-soaked grass, water spraying, and slid to a stop a few feet from the door. Carson scrambled back, eyeing the monster. Metal glinted as lightning flashed and blood mixed with the puddling water around it. Sparks shot out from its back, just below the neck as the body twitched. Carson jumped back, bringing her carbine up.
Chief, look out!
A deep, almost mechanical snarl ripped through the air as the other two monsters charged. Carson aimed and fired twice. The monster on the right lurched, knocked off balance by the impact, then fell face first. The third screamed again, closing the distance with inhuman speed. Behind it, six more had appeared through the rain.
Damn, they're fast, she thought.
Carson got her weapon around just as the monster reached her. It slammed a massive hand on the barrel and swiped the carbine right out of her grip. Carson yelped as the monster pushed her back, a giant claw raking across her visor. Her back hit the wall, knocking the air almost completely from her lungs as she struggled to free her pistol from its holster on her thigh.
Shannon!
The alien tossed her weapon aside. The monster opened its mouth to scream again, and its head erupted in a splash of blood and gore that splattered across Carson's helmet. She felt hands grab her, pulling her back into the lobby of the tower.
Dazzler!
West shouted. Even through her armor, Carson felt the massive woof from the flashbang, her helmet's automatic sound-dampening hardware saving her ears. She wiped away the dark liquid covering her visor and saw several of the monsters on their knees, hands over their eyes and ears, writhing in pain. One near the front had taken the worst of the bang. It lay on its side, feet from the door, blood seeping from its eyes and ears. After several seconds, the remaining monsters struggled to their feet and moved away, disappearing through the storm. Their high-pitched screams echoed in the distance for several minutes before the storm drowned them out.
"You all right, Chief?"
Birch asked. The status indicator on her HUD showed 99% integrity. The only real damage was the scratches down the front of her visor.
"Fine."
She finished drawing her pistol and walked toward the open door, scanning the tarmac.
"Everybody okay?"
Her team all responded affirmatively as she cautiously stepped back into the rain. Keeping her pistol trained on the closest monster, she approached, wanting a better look at what they were up against. She frowned as she got her first real look at the thing, stopping a foot from its head. It was dressed in tattered work overalls that would have been found in any city back on Earth. Mud partially covered its bald head, and its skin was a dull gray. Now she could see that its claws were actually some kind of biomechanical exoglove, covering the tips and tops of the fingers and hand. A flexible metal plate extended back over the wrist to a separate plate that wrapped around the forearm. Birch stepped up and kicked one of its booted feet.
"Well, whatever it is, at least we know we can kill them."
"Damn, they're ugly,"
Nunez said.
"Whatever they are."
Carson knelt down next to the head and shoulders, getting a closer look at the gray, bony protrusions on the skull.
"Could it be human?"
Nunez laughed nervously.
"There's no way that's human, Chief. Look at it. Unless it, like, mutated or something, right? I saw a movie once where they used an alien virus to transform their victims into zombies that vomited all over the place, infecting more and more."
"Enough," Carson said, waving her hand.
"Moretti, check it out. Any sign of biocontamination?"
Another howl pierced the storm around them, distant and ominous. The Pathfinders all turned, trying to decide where the terrible sound had originated, but the storm made it nearly impossible.
"Okay, change plans," Carson said. "Popoff, did you get the shunt?"
When the Pathfinder didn't answer, Carson turned and found Popoff standing there, visor still up from earlier, mouth agape, eyes fixed on the dead monster. Carson tapped the side of her helmet.
"Popoff, come back to me."
She seemed to shake herself back, her eyes meeting Carson's.
"Huh? Yeah, I'm okay."
"The shunt?" She tapped the pouch on her chest.
"Right here. Give me a few minutes with it, then I can tell you where the auxiliary computer cores are. Standard colony protocol is to have them far removed from major settlements. Keep them away from any kind of environmental danger that might threaten the city, hurricanes and such."
"What were those things saying?"
Birch asked.
"Sounded like a name. Shannon."
"That's what I heard," Nunez said. "Which officially makes this the weirdest drop I've ever done."
Carson turned to West.
"Where's our ride?"
"Greer," West said over the tactical channel.
"Inbound,"
the pilot said. "The storm's picked up a bit. I'm having some trouble with my nav system. Do me a solid and pop an IR beacon, would you?" West pulled a small fist-sized cylinder from a pouch, twisted the top, and threw it into the rain.
"Beacon out."
"I got it. Time on station, 60 seconds. Moretti finished running his gauntlet over the corpse and sat back.
"I'm not detecting any pathogens, and it doesn't appear to be infected with any virus or bacteria, which is strange in and of itself."
He glanced up at Carson.
"I need a sample to do a more thorough scan back in medical to be 100%.
She nodded approval, and the medic pushed the knuckles of his gauntlet against the body's chest. Probes snapped out and dug into its flesh. Carson looked away, trying and failing to ignore the snap of bones and sputter of drills as Moretti worked.
Contact! Nunez said, backing toward the control tower's entrance. Lots more contact?
A chorus of guttural howls pierced the storm around them as several shapes appeared in the rain. First 10, then 20.
Greer?
Carson asked over the IR as more monsters continued to appear.
They don't seem happy with us, Nunez said.
The mule shot out from above the tower, blasting the team with hot jet wash from its engines.
What the hell are those things?
Greer asked. Popoff took a knee beside Moretti, who was still cutting, and leveled her carbine at the still-growing number of dark figures.
Sure would be nice to have a strike marine rifle right now. Grenade launchers, shot rounds, high-powered bolts.
We can still hurt them before they close in.
Moretti knocked viscera from his gauntlet and retracted the probes.
If we can get away without killing anymore, Carson said, it might help when we finally make contact with whatever's in charge of these things.
Could be a species that likes it when you beat them up,
Nunez said.
Right, Moretti? Like, when we bumped into those Kroar in New Bastion.
That is not the same thing,
the medic said.
At all.
The mule flared overhead and swept into the wide avenue running past the tower. Engines blasted the wet ground, vaporizing the pooling water and falling rain, creating clouds of mist. It dropped through the air between the team and the line of dark figures, turning so the open rear cargo ramp faced Carson and her team.
Whoa!
Greer shouted through the IR.
What the hell are... Damn it! Under fire! Getting hits against my forward windows!
Carson raised her carbine and looked through the optics. The aliens in the front ranks stood still, hands opening and closing. Flickers of motion from the back ranks caught her attention.
I don't see any weapons,
Carson said.
Rocks? They're slinging rocks at me,
Greer said.
Move your asses before those uglies get serious!
Shannon!
Erupted from the aliens and echoed over the sound of the mule's engines. Their front line charged.
Go!
Carson yelled as she opened fire on the advancing threat. More aliens came swarming around a nearby building, chanting the name.
Contact right!
West yelled, adding his fire to Carson's. Popoff slowed, her carbine trembling in her hands.
Come on!
Birch yelled, pulling Popoff forward, practically dragging her toward the mule. Carson dropped three of the monsters on the run.
Greer, prep for dust off now!
Moretti and Nunez reached the ramp just as the mule lifted into the air. Popoff slipped in a puddle and landed hard, her helmet bouncing off the wet ground. Hooking a hand under the armor plate on her back, Birch picked her up and carried her forward. He hauled her towards the mule, then tossed her into the open cargo bay like she was a sack of potatoes. Carson stopped next to the mule and fired off another burst. The eyes of the attackers gleamed in the light, all appearing fixated on her. The mule rose another yard and jerked back. She slapped a fresh magazine into her weapon and fired into the legs of the oncomers, sending them sprawling and tripping over each other. A shadow zipped across the air and struck her helmet just above the forehead. Her visor cracked into spider webs and her HUD broke into static. Carson fired with one hand, backpedaling as she struggled to remove her helmet. She slapped at the latch just below her chin, but it wouldn't budge.
Think, if you're a pathfinder!
Her mind raced for a solution, knowing full well that the aliens were almost upon her. Brushing her hand against her left ear, she tried to jimmy the helmet loose, and then felt the slight depression of a button. She jammed her finger against it, and her broken visor popped off, giving her a look at an alien just as it swiped at her face. Ducking to one side, she fired blindly, then turned and ran for the mule and bumped into West. He fired from the hip with one arm and pulled her toward their escape. Gauss round snapped over their head and hit the aliens. Carson ran in a crouch to the mule's open ramp, where the rest of her team laid down a torrent of fire. Carson ran forward and slowed as she got to the edge of the ramp that hovered 2 yards over the ground. She grabbed the ramp and turned back to West, who was finally running for safety, dead aliens forming a bloody carpet behind him. The mule lifted, taking Carson off her feet. She reached out to West and he grabbed her by the wrist. The shuttle shot up and Carson's grip slipped just a bit. She flexed the pseudo-muscles in her forearm and felt the metal of the ramp give ever so slightly. She looked down. West dangled from her other arm, and a mass of aliens clustered around where they'd been seconds ago. A sling-thrown rock whacked against the underside of the ramp. Birch maglocked his boots to the ramp and wrapped his meaty hands around Carson's forearm. He lifted them both up and dropped Carson onto the ramp next to him, then got one arm under West's shoulder and chucked him into the mule's cargo area. Carson stumbled into the mule.
Greer! Hit it!
The mule's engines roared and it rocketed into the sky. Birch closed the ramp and servos whined as the ramp shut, sealing the bay off from the raging storm outside. Looking up, Carson counted her team. All present, and all of them, but Birch, looked scared. As the mule leveled out, Carson struggled to slow her breathing. She gave the metal deck a pat, then kissed it through her missing visor before sitting up.
You all right, Chief?
West asked, extending a hand.
Yeah,
Carson said, accepting his help to her feet.
Everyone okay?
The master sergeant nodded. Carson took a deep breath, mentally running through their options. Returning to the Enduring Spirit was the most obvious choice, but going back to Hale without any real information was not her mission. He would want answers, and Carson was determined to bring him some. Greer's voice came through the IR.
ETA to Spirit in 97 minutes.
Negative,
Carson said without hesitation.
We are not returning to station.
Greer hesitated, then said,
Say again?
Keep us near the colony and stand by.
Okay.
West leaned close.
What are your orders, Chief?
Hale sent us down here for answers. We're not going back until we have them.
Carson turned to Popoff, who was sitting in one of the drop seats, helmet in the seat next to her, sweat matting her red hair to her pale face.
Popoff? The auxiliary data site, Carson said.
The commo specialist looked up, then glanced around as if she suddenly realized where she was.
Yes, Chief. She'll be able to find it now.
Producing the small cylindrical device from the pouch on her chest, she pulled a tablet from the small gear bag on the small of her back.
Give me a few minutes.
Hopefully we've got enough fuel to hit that location and make it back to the Spirit,
Carson said. She pulled off her helmet, then turned it over in her hands, inspecting a dent near the temple that she didn't remember getting.
Sergeant West, do we have a...
West handed her a new helmet. She tossed her broken one into the open cargo box and sniffed the insides of her new gear. The factory fresh smell made her nose wrinkle in disgust.
I'll get the team refit, West said. You anticipate a less urban location for our next mission?
I do. You have active camo cloaks in there?
Carson motioned to the cargo box. West stared at her for a moment, then blinked slowly.
Yes, of course you do,
Carson nodded quickly.
Get the team prepped for forests.
Roger that, Chief.
And Sergeant, good work down there,
she said.
Say, ma'am, I've had better drops.
And I've had worse.
Carson slapped him on the shoulder and went to Popoff. Popoff ran a data line from her gauntlet to the shunt, then smiled. She looked up from her tablet to Carson.
Got it, ma'am. The encryption protocols are years old, not hard to crack. Looks like the auxiliary site is in the valley, 30 clicks north of the city. No roads, nothing else out there. Must have sent the data by satellite.
Send the coordinates to Greer, nice work.
A second later, the pilot said over the IR,
What's this?
Our next stop, Carson said.
What about those things?
We know they're out there now. Just get us to those coordinates. We'll worry about any hostiles when we get there.
The mule banked under them, and as Carson felt the engines flare, she hoped she sounded more confident than she felt. The throbbing in her leg was building again. The temptation to abort the mission and return to Hale was strong, but she wasn't going to screw up her first chance back in the field. Near the back of the bay, Moretti sat upright.
Huh. Now that's funny.
He pulled a small capsule of brown fluid from his gauntlet and held it up to his face, examining it with a frown.
Those aren't words I want to hear from my doctor, Carson said.
Well, I'll have to run some more tests to be sure, but this blood sample they took from those savages isn't actually blood, nor do they have any DNA to examine.
Carson looked at the green stains covering her armor.
You don't say.
Moretti glanced up and saw what Carson was looking at.
Well, the oxygenated and glucose-bearing particles those things had aren't the same as red blood cells. And the tissue sample I took is a polymer lattice, not muscle or fat tissue.
That sounds familiar,
West said. The entire team looked at the medic.
So then, what did we kill back there?
Carson asked.
Not to be overly pedantic,
Moretti said.
But you can't kill what's not technically alive. Those specimens were 100% artificial constructs.
What the hell do you mean, artificial constructs? Nunez asked.
And
never had a robot scream at me and try to rip my arms off.
Moratti, this tech you're describing, West said, crossing his arms over his chest. Have you seen it before?
Moratti swiped two fingers across his metagauntlet, then flicked them into the air between him and the others, where a holo of a large, three-dimensional image of one of the monsters standing upright, almost at attention, appeared, followed by several transparent panels displaying information and data relating to certain parts of the creature.
They're not human, altered or otherwise, Moratti said. However, they are not a new alien race either. I'm running a secondary pathology scan to be sure, but I'm fairly certain these creatures are actually Mark III battle constructs.
New holos popped up next to the hostiles they encountered, images of well-built, jowly soldiers in Terran uniforms holding oversized Gauss rifles, skin mottled in green, black, and brown. Memories of the Ember War against the Zaros came to Carson, and a chill ran up her spine. Humanity had survived that war through a series of small miracles and technological advances courtesy of alien allies. One of those advances was the rapid production of artificial foot soldiers, tough enough to take out the Zaros drones, but little better than cannon fodder. Those foot soldiers had been produced and died in the millions.
Doughboys? She asked. No, that's impossible. Doughboys were programmed to never harm humans. What we met down there sure as hell wasn't a doughboy.
The design has been modified significantly from the original model, but the basic composition is the same, Moratti said. They reached the end of their service life soon after the war and were decommissioned. A few kept ticking, and I had the chance to examine one during trauma school. Brass wanted us familiar with their physiology, so to speak, in case the production lines were brought out of mothballs. Despite the adjustments to their behavior and appearance, those were doughboys.
Why would the colonists make altered doughies?
Birch asked.
Why did they even bring the tech with them?
Moratti shrugged.
I'm a medic, not an intelligence analyst.
Carson took a seat, eyeing the claw marks across her helmet. She took a deep breath and leaned back against the bulkhead. Moretti's revelation posed more questions than answers. Did a colonist try to forge an army to take over the city? Had they unleashed golems that wiped out the entire colony?
That there are doughboys on Terra Nova begs another question, Moratti said. Did the Christophorus also bring the equipment to create procedurally generated human beings?
Proceeds are outlawed, Nunez said. Have been for years.
The first wave came over before the ban, Popoff said. You think they brought the tubes and computers with them?
Earth needed every tube it could build before the Zaros attacked again. Why give a valuable asset to a mission going to uninhabited space? Besides, the crashes were huge, Birch said. The facility on Hawaii took up most of Maui. There's no way they could bring that in a single colony ship.
Well, this day's been chock full of surprises, Nunez said.
Let's not rule anything out just yet. Maybe a race of four-armed, 10-foot-tall aliens with tusks is waiting for us at the auxiliary site.
What I'm done waiting for is all of you to replace your spent magazines and hot-swap your battery packs, West said. You think because we're on Terra Nova, post-mission ops have changed?
The team got out of their seats and rushed to the supply crate. Carson recognized the tone of West's voice, the sergeant's way of refocusing the team on the mission instead of their problems, a tactic used since the first days humans carried bronze weapons into battle. Carson stayed seated, took an earpiece out of her new helmet, and opened a channel to the enduring spirit.
This was a recon mission, she thought. We got some information. Time to toss this hot potato to the decision makers.
Chapter 5. Are you sure this data is accurate? Hale asked, his image flickering in the mule's cockpit display.
Yes, sir, Carson said. That's all the data Moretti's been able to gather on the hostiles. Maybe the spirit's computers can glean something more.
Carson could barely make out Hale's jaw working back and forth as he seemed to contemplate everything she'd just explained. He looked off-screen at something, and a second later, his wife's face came into frame.
This is hard to process for two reasons, Marie Hale said.
First, the Christophorus didn't have Doughboy or Procy facilities on their ship's manifest. And second, the jump window from Earth, or any crucible gate in the galaxy for that matter, to Terra Nova has only been opened twice. The Christophorus' jump and ours. So, how did the colonists get hold of the technology?
Hale shook his head.
We can piece together the past later. We need to find out what happened to the first wave, and if Terra Nova is safe for the rest of us.
Carson nodded to the mule's navigation display.
We'll find out soon. If Popoff is right, the backup site should house an entire database of files. Colony reports, transit logs. It's not that large of a facility, according to what I can see on the scopes.
If they haven't destroyed that as well, Hale said. Marie gave the director an almost imperceptible nudge with her elbow. Hale remained stoic.
You're doing an outstanding job down there, Carson. Good thinking to locate the auxiliary site, Marie said.
Thank you, ma'am.
Keep us advised of the situation and report back as soon as you've secured the facility.
The transmission cut off before Carson could reply, leaving her and Greer in silence.
Hale still has no confidence in me,
Carson thought, trying not to let her disappointment show. After several long moments, Greer said,
Looks like there's a good-sized clearing about 2 clicks away. Don't see anywhere else to put down.
Roger that,
Carson said.
We don't mind the hike. Just get us on the ground.
Carson wound fabric around her throbbing leg. The digital pattern material faded in and out before going semi-opaque. She stood up and adjusted the tunic and cloak over her armor. Colors rippled over the cloak as she moved too quickly for the adaptive camouflage to adjust. West tossed her a roll of fabric as wide as her wrist. She caught it and wound it over the barrel of her carbine.
We have the AC-ready carbines on the Spirit, the lead sergeant said, and a cargo pod on deck 19, underneath 5 other layers of cargo pods. I hate going into the field with anything less than the best.
You had 10 minutes before we went voidborne off the ship, Carson said. I've got no complaints about our gear. You were a Boy Scout, weren't you?
West raised a 3-fingered salute.
Be prepared. And I was an Eagle Scout.
Inspect me.
Carson pulled a hood over her helm and drew a veil down over her visor. Light dimmed as her camo cloak adjusted, then her view returned to normal. West removed the optic on his carbine and pointed it at her.
You're essentially invisible to the naked eye and infrared beyond 5 meters, no gaps to your coverage.
West looked back to the cargo bay where Nunez, Popoff, and Moretti were doing push-ups while Birch supervised.
Some corrective training.
West said.
Is it me or has the light oculation improved?
Carson swept her hood back and deactivated the camo cloak.
This is Karagold technology. Hale went to his contact on their planet a few months ago and got them to improve it. Seems he's one of the few humans they won't shoot on sight,
West said.
Wonder how Earth will deal with them now that Hale's out here with us.
Carson looked up as warning lights over the door flashed amber. She felt the mule sway beneath her feet.
Go time,
West shouted.
Active stealth drop. We're here not to be seen or heard, understand?
Yes, Sergeant,
called out the 3 Pathfinders doing push-ups.
Recover,
Birch said. Carson went to the ramp and locked her boots against the floor just before the door lowered and wind howled through the cargo bay. Outside, a thick forest spread through a valley between 2 mountain lines. Rapids tore down a river, and for a second Carson wondered if the colonists had ever taken up whitewater rafting. When the mule sat down 5 minutes later, Carson's team hit the ground and vanished into the tree line around the clearing. The rain had stopped, but the storm had left the ground soft and damp. A layer of fog drifted above them, partially obscuring the tops of the trees, which appeared similar to Earth's pines, tall, thin trunks, with branches covered in thousands of needles. Despite a slight breeze, the surrounding forest was eerily quiet. Carson did a slow sweep of the area, her thermal scanners picking up small animals in the brush. She saw the outline of her pathfinders, their positions sent through their local IR network on her HUD.
Team, report,
West said.
Animal trails,
Birch said.
No tracks or trace of anything the size of the hostiles.
Couple predatory birds about the size of eagles to our south, Nunez said. Sure, they're not hungry. Right, Moretti?
I told you never to speak of that again,
the medic said.
Damnedest thing, Nunez said. We're doing a bacteria collection on a silver tier world, and this pterodactyl analog swoops in.
Nunez,
Moretti growled.
Tries to carry him off, but can't. Then it...
Nunez gasped as Birch wrapped an arm around his neck and cut off his airway. Carson rolled her eyes. She expected nerves from her team. Letting off steam would keep them sharp later on.
Air is clear, she said. Let him go, Birch.
All over him. Didn't get that smell off his armor for days,
Nunez said.
Kind of reminds me of British Columbia,
Popoff said. Carson stepped around the mule's nose, looking up at Greer.
Button up and wait for contact. Keep your eyes open.
Wait, you want us to just wait out here all by ourselves?
That's right. If you don't hear from us in 2 hours, consider us overdue and return to the ship for further instructions.
Well, I turn into a pumpkin at midnight, so...
Well, then I guess we'd better get moving.
As the ramp whined closed, Carson considered the slick-top mule. She wasn't thrilled about leaving a defenseless aircraft behind, but she couldn't see any other option. They didn't have the fuel to circulate in the air while her team explored the facility. Hopefully the forest would provide the aircrew with enough concealment to make up for the lack of defensive weapons.
Okay, Carson said, stepping up to her waiting team. Standard scout formation. Nunez, you have point. Birch, how many drones you have left?
Just the one.
Keep it on standby. If shit hits the fan, we'll launch it for close-in support. Active camo engaged. Move too fast and you'll blur. Keep your heads on a swivel. If you see any of those things, make sure you get good, well-aimed shots. Pathfinders, light the darkness.
We are the torch that finds the way, her team responded, finishing the motto. Carson switched off her HUD tracker to watch her team move with a naked eye. Slightly blurred shapes in the growing darkness were all she could make out. They moved well, avoiding sticks and rustling branches. Anyone in the woods would dismiss their passing as just noise in a breezy forest. She was, she had to admit, impressed. They reached the facility 20 minutes later, tucked away at the base of a small hill surrounded by trees. At the head of their column, Nunez took a knee and pointed. His voice came through the IR, low and alert.
Looks like remains of a fire. 3 o'clock. 12 meters in.
Carson could barely make it out through the trees.
Controlled? Not firm. Looks like it might be a campfire. Slight pit. Rocks around the edge. Got an IR glow from embers.
To Carson's left, Popoff stopped abruptly.
Ugh, shit.
What's wrong?
West asked, stepping toward her. Popoff held up a hand.
Stop, Sarge.
She lifted her foot and checked the underside, then rubbed it back and forth along the ground.
I think I found a latrine.
Is it human?
Moretti asked.
How the hell would I know that, Doc?
Popoff inspected her boot again before holding it out toward the medic.
You want to come give it a whiff and tell me?
Movement, Birch announced. 2 o'clock, halfway down the building.
Carson dropped to a knee, bringing her carbine up to the spot indicated. She did a double take as two figures stepped up to the smoldering campfire.
Son of a bitch.
Two young human boys came out of the building, talking and smiling. One was about a head taller than the other, and both were dressed in clothes that looked almost too small for them. Their shirts were discolored and dark stains covered their pants.
They can't be more than 9 or 10,
Birch said.
If that,
West added. The taller boy slapped the other on the shoulder, turned and started trotting toward the team.
And he's coming right for us,
Popoff said. The kid passed within feet of Nunez, oblivious of the slight distortion field. He stopped several feet away from Popoff and began untying a length of rope that held up his pants.
Chief?
West asked.
Grab him,
Carson said. Try not to spook the other one. Popoff's outline stood and slowly navigated the distance between her and the kid. Reaching him just before he dropped his pants, she took him from behind, one hand around his chest, the other cupping over his mouth to muffle his screams. His arm shot up in a panic, clawing at his unseen attacker as she pulled him back farther into the forest. He kicked a leg out and twisted around, trying to break loose, but it was no use. Popoff's armor-enhanced muscles held him like a vice.
Calm down,
Popoff told him, but the disembodied voice only seemed to terrify him more. He kicked a tree trunk, knocking bark loose. Carson saw the other boy stand and strain to see into the trees.
Steve? You okay in there?
He called out in a meek voice.
Shut him up,
Moretti hissed. The boy kicked another tree. Carson cursed and ran up to the struggling boy, swept her hood back and pulled her helmet off. The boy froze as she materialized in front of him, eyes locked on hers.
It's okay, Carson said. We're not here to hurt you. You're not in danger.
Shock and terror filled the boy's eyes.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
The boy took several rapid breaths, then without taking his eyes from Carson's, nodded.
If my friends let go of your mouth, will you promise not to scream?
After hesitating for a moment, the boy nodded again. Carson motioned for Popoff, and she lifted her invisible hand.
Help!
Popoff cursed and slapped her hand back over the boy's mouth. Carson looked to where the other boy stood, poking at the fire with a small stick. He looked over his shoulder for a second, then turned back to the fire.
Looks like we have trust issues already,
Popoff said. Carson took a moment to look over the kid. It wasn't much more than skin and bones, and despite her original assessment, he wasn't outgrowing his clothes as much as they were falling apart from wear. They hung loosely around his skinny frame. He looked like he hadn't showered in months.
Look, I know you're scared. Here.
Carson pulled out a ration bar, ripped a corner open, and held it out for the boy.
Are you hungry? Go on, take it. Eat.
The boy's frantic gaze hovered on Carson for another second, before locking onto the bar. Cautiously, he reached out and took the food. Popoff pulled her hand away as he inspected it, turning it over in his hand, before taking a small bite out of the end. His eyes went wide as he swallowed, then immediately took another bite, practically shoving half the bar into his mouth. Carson waited for him to take a second bite before continuing.
My name's Catherine. What's yours?
Stephen,
the boy said, his mouth full. He swallowed and said,
Stephen, it's nice to meet you, Stephen. I'm from the Enduring Spirit, from Earth. Do you know where that is?
That's where Mom and Dad came from.
He folded the wrapper over the ration bar and looked toward the fire.
But Earth was destroyed by the Zaros.
No, we won the war. The Zaros are gone forever. Where are your parents?
The boy didn't answer. Instead, he looked down at the half-eaten bar with longing. Carson took another one from her pack and gave it to him. He started eating again, looking from her to the other boy.
Who's that over there, Stephen?
Carson asked.
My brother.
Is your brother hungry, too?
The boy nodded. Carson stood, holding out her hand.
Should we go give him some food, too?
Did Miss Shannon find you?
There's that name again.
West's disembodied voice came over Carson's shoulder. Stephen's eyes went wide with fear, and he shrank back against Popoff. Carson frowned.
Who is Miss Shannon?
Stephen hesitated a moment, concern evident on his face.
She's our teacher. She brought us here when the monsters came.
Where is she?
Miss Shannon said she was going to get help to get a knight. Then she'd come back to take care of us. If she didn't call you, then that means...
His bottom lip began to quiver.
Hey, now, be brave, okay?
Carson touched his shoulder gently but awkwardly. Comforting children was not part of her training.
Let's get your brother some food. Then we'll all leave here and go to my spaceship. Have you ever been on a spaceship?
Stephen shook his head.
It's very nice. Other kids to play with, showers. Grown-ups will protect you from the monsters. That sound good?
Stephen nodded quickly.
Okay, get your brother for us. I don't want him to get scared and run away,
Carson said. The boy led Carson out of the forest toward the campfire. The other boy turned as they neared and cried out, backing away from them. Stephen went after him, grabbing him by the arm.
It's okay, Tony. She's nice. She has food.
At the mention of food, all fear seemed to fade from the shorter boy's face. He stepped toward her, his expression a mix of concern and excitement.
Can I have some?
Stephen gave him the other bar. The boy snatched it greedily, ripped it open, and took a bite with no hesitation.
Is there anyone else here? Any adults?
Carson asked.
Just my brother and me,
Stephen said. West's voice came through Carson's earbud, Chief.
I want to introduce you to my friends, okay?
Carson said, kneeling.
They're nice people, just like me. We're all here to help you.
The boys huddled against each other, the smaller one licking the inside of the wrapper. Carson's heart ached to see them like this. How long had they been out here fending for themselves? Come on out, Carson said into a mic on the back of her hand.
Try not to look too threatening.
Her team emerged from the forest, their camo deactivated and helmets off. The boys watched the Pathfinders warily as they approached, as if still not convinced they were friendly. Tony tossed the wrapper into the fire pit.
Do you have more?
Lots more.
Carson took out a pack of electrolyte jelly beans and poured them into their hands.
I need to look inside,
she said, pointing to the squat building behind them.
Would that be okay?
The boys exchanged glances, obviously conflicted about letting these strangers into their home.
I promise, you're safe with us, and we have more food.
This seemed to settle the issue.
Come on, Stephen said. Pop off, Moretti, inside. Rest, keep perimeter security,
Carson said into her mic. The boy led them through the door, into a small room filled with open crates of field rations, discarded wrappers, empty water bottles, and piles of clothes. A row of decade-old computer terminals sat along the left hall, also covered with worn clothes and discarded food wrappers. Almost overwhelmed by the smell of trash and body odor, Carson had to fight the urge to vomit as she stepped inside.
Let's make this quick.
Popoff crossed to the terminals and went to work. Moretti knelt in front of Tony, setting his pack down next to him. After convincing the boy his metagauntlet wasn't going to hurt him, he proceeded to scan both boys in turn, shaking his head as the medical data flowed in.
Well, aside from some borderline malnutrition and mild dehydration, they appear to be in good health. Field rats saved the day.
Moretti motioned to the boxes.
Looks like they had a few months left.
We picked mushrooms and tubies,
Stephen said, going to a box and picking up what looked like a cross between a potato and a turnip.
Just like Miss Shannon told us. We had the packs when we couldn't find anything else.
Do you have cocoa?
Tony asked.
I want cocoa.
We have all you want back on the Enduring Spirit,
the medic said. Any sign of infection? Carson asked.
None. They've got green blood cells in their system. Both need a booster.
Across the room, Popoff slammed a fist against the terminal.
Oh, come on!
What's wrong? Carson asked.
All the cores are gone,
Popoff said as she slammed the access panel shut. Stephen finished his second water bottle and wiped his mouth with the back of his hand.
Miss Shannon got rid of those right after she brought us here.
Did she hide them nearby?
Popoff asked.
She broke them with her hammer, then threw them in the fire, then threw the melty parts in the river,
the older boy said. Popoff threw her hands up.
Well, thanks. Just great. Call in evac. We've got some records right here,
Carson said, inclining her head slightly toward the boys.
Just not the ones we thought we'd find.
How long has Shannon been gone?
The boys shared another glance, then Stephen shook his head.
I'm not sure. It's been a long time.
Did she say where she was going?
She was looking for knights,
Tony said, almost jumping up and down.
Knights? You mean armor? Big soldiers, taller in this building?
No, Tony, she said she was gonna find knight, not knights. I think it was her friend,
Stephen said. Tony sat back down, glaring at his brother. Stephen continued.
She told us to stay right here, that we were safe here and the bad ones couldn't get us. She said she'd be back in a few days, but she never came back.
It's been 100 years almost,
Tony said.
Where's everyone else in the colony?
Carson asked.
I don't know,
Stephen said.
They're all gone.
Okay. Tell me what happened. Start from the last time you saw your parents.
They took us to school,
Stephen said.
It was the last day before Christmas break. They were going to take us to the waterfalls on the weird island and let us see the carvings, too.
Carving?
Moretti stopped when Carson held up a hand.
Miss Shannon was teaching us math when there was a big boom on the other side of the city. She was talking on her thing.
He pointed to Carson's gauntlet.
And got very angry. There was shouting and banging and more booms. And then she broke the window, which is a very bad thing, isn't it, Tony?
The younger boy looked down and shuffled his feet.
There was a big ship in the sky over the city. Miss Shannon said a bunch of naughty words and climbed out of the window, then told Tony and me to come with her. She said the city was gonna fall down and we had to go with her. I don't know why she took us and not her friends,
he said.
What did the ship look like? Was it alien?
Carson asked.
It was the rock ship. It was in the the big ship Mom and Dad came in. Miss Shannon said it was full of the bad men.
Okay. Then what did Miss Shannon do with you?
She took us on a walk,
Tony said.
Very long walk, through the mud and stuff, then here.
We stayed here for a long time, Stephen said.